how do parks fit into that?
Well, I was quite, this was all started with our Harwood Park here. They were going to cut off half the park and they're going to put a school on it.
This is Harwood Park. Harwood Park, yes.
So I said, well, I was only 25 at the time, and I said, they can't do this to our park. It's a dedicated park. So I went to one neighbor and went to the other neighbor. They all agreed with me, and I was naive enough in those days to say, if they agree with you, that means that they're wholly agree with you. They're just not saying yes. So we went and had a petition. And one of the counselors there was good enough to, I asked him about it, that I trusted, and he showed me how to prepare a letter. And how to do, you got to petition them to do this and give good reasons for it, you know. And not only your reasons, he says, tell the others. And we sit laying on the floor here, and you're telling me, teaching me all about when you go before council, you're not talking for yourself. He said, you've got to be sure that you're talking for everybody else, you know. And so forth, and then you got to do some research of why it was there and why they can't take it away. You say they can't take it. Now, why can't they take it away? He says, I really don't know. He says, find out. So it took me a lot of, research. What is a dedicated park, you know, and yes. Has there ever been a dedicated park that was taken away? Can it be undedicated? How can it be undedicated? All these things have came into the picture. So when I went before council and I told them this, council was very annoyed, and the manager was annoyed because he approved of it, the stakes were in, he approved of it, and now the councilors and I gave them enough of a green that they asked the manager, he says, well, dedicated park, can it be dedicated? Well, he says it can be undedicated. Well, when has it been undedicated? Well, it's somewhere in the files there. I'll look for it. And the next meeting they asked, they said, well, did you find it? He says, we're still looking. We can't find it. We're still looking. But we know it was done. Which one? Do you know if you know which one? Well, he couldn't really say. So finally, we won the case.
Was this your first outing in politics?
That was my first one. And it wasn't the last one, but yes. It was...
He can't say that I wasn't a little shaky
about it all. I thought these people in there, when they marched in there, that they were the gods of thing. What they said went, and a little gimpy guy like me coming in there with the leg braces and then the cane, you know, and a young guy. What kind of a character is this?
That's an interesting question about how you argue your position. And so how do you know, or how do you decide what is wrong and what is right for the environment?
Well, I guess first of all, it's in my own self, you know, that's not the way it should be done. And I guess over the years, I've learned to research a little bit, to this was done before and how it was done, you know. Can be done, and can it be undone, and so forth.
So, what factors would you take into account when you're trying to decide, well, what's right for this piece of land, or how should we use it?
Well, I went as far as going out to the UBC there and looking into the law books of cases, you know, and to see. And then, of course, I don't know how to read a law books and how to find cases. And I'm keeping this a secret because I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing, because the council will find out. And one of the students came up and said, what are you looking for? Well, I said, I'm just looking for some basic. He said, well, I can help you. And no, I said, I can help myself. But I wish I would have taken his advice, and I would have saved a lot of time. But I couldn't find it. There was one case someplace in Eastern Canada where there was a dedicated park that was expropriated and used for other purposes, but I was pretty convinced that you'd have to go to a vote, mm-hmm. and have it done that way. It had to be undedicated, and it had to be 75% to undedicated as compared to dedicated.
Yes, so yeah. when you were a parks commissioner, if that would have been something you would have been dealing with then, is the various kinds of park dedications and whether you can undedicate them or...
But it's political too, you see. The council have the last say. We maybe, we're just a committee of council, so we might say that we'd like to have this dedicated. So we said, well, the council might not want it. They did, on their long-range plans, they had some other ideas for it. Some others on the commission, they know other things happening. They maybe have discussed it with somebody. So we look at the right political time. And when we were in the 70s, and then when we got another Doug Drummond in for park for mayor, he was environmentally, he lived right down at the Burrard Inlet. He ran along the trails along Burrard Inlet. So he was very supportive. And then whenever anything came before him to dedicate a parkland, he was, him and his council were all for it, or yes.
In your opinion, are some areas of the natural environment in Burnaby more valuable or more important than others?
No, they're all has their own unique features, and especially if somebody learns the geology and the happenings of glaciers and everything. Like whenever I look at Burnaby Mountain and so forth, and the mountains, therefore I can see the glaciers, because that's how it was formed. You know, the glaciers came through the mountains there, and you can see it, how it pushed through and bulldozed its way up there and left the gravel pit there, and then it melted, and then it went ahead again, and it pushed up to Kingsway, you know, and they left a big place behind it. So to me, whenever I look at the hills immediately, I also look back what it was when it was the glaciers was pushing it, and what during and after, you know, what did it look like after it had, and the thousands of years after that, when the monster trees grew here. There was trees here so big, there was one tree stump here that was laying, a log that was laying across the front yard that I got a picture of, and it was about maybe 8 feet in diameter. Yeah, and kids were standing on top of it, and men were standing it. And they were still, the log was way above them, and the only reason it was there for so long, nobody could move it. It was cut and everything, and it was butchered right here at in the Harwood Park, you know, and it was cut down and logged, and somehow stayed here for a long time until somebody moved it. Yeah, and then the ravines there. I had a good mentor there, Bob Gardner. He was a great friend of mine. He was a biology teacher in Burnaby Central, and him and I got along great. We were designing trails, you know, like the trail around Burnaby Lake. He was the one who surveyed that with his friends, and we built it, and he would talk to me about these things and put on the edges that I didn't understand quite, you know, like the ravines in South Burnaby where it was all melting, you know, and water was running off of this big massive ice, and that's where the ravines were so thousands of years old, you know, and here we're wanting to fill it up with garbage, you know, that was a remnant of a great ice age, you know, and great delta. Yeah, and all these, and the Burnaby Lake is specific because that was a big hole that was bulldozed out, and you can find the ashes on the bottom when they were dredging it, when the volcanoes were blowing up in Pemberton and Garibaldi, you know, and all the ash and everything is on the bottom of the Burnaby Lake there still, and not that deep down either, you know, you can find these floats, the stones that float, you know, and yes. It's the ashes, and so that's interesting. And then of course Deer Lake is another little spot, and how that came about I don't have an idea, and creeks run into it, and it's feeds into Burnaby Lake, and Burnaby Lake into the Brunette River, and of course all these things sort of fit together like the blood vessels in the human body, you know, and they,
yes,
they each feed certain organs.
It's an interesting perspective, isn't it? Looking way back to the time of the glacier, and you can see the results in the landscape. It's an interesting perspective.
I had a deal with Still Creek, you know, and they used to dredge Still Creek every few years. They'd go in there with a big soup, and he'd dredge it and straighten it out and throw all the dirt out and everything. And I talked to some old timers, and I'm talking about years ago, and they said that they used to the mill pond, and they used to go down there and digging up clams, and they were looking for the pearls, you know, digging up these clams, and they were looking for pearls, you know. I said, what? Where was this? So they told me right here at Willingdon, you know, and that's a low spot there. And I said, you're kidding, yeah, and so forth. And George Green, he wrote about the history of Burnaby, and he talks about how Burnaby, the Steel Creek meandered, and people would rent little sabots in Vancouver, and then they'd go back and forth and go to Burnaby Lake and then back again, you know. And,
oh.
And it was a Sunday afternoon, and they'd take a little sabo and at how it meandered. And now it doesn't meander, it's straight. So I was doing some research on streams and everything, and then I realized, well, the streams. And then I got some really good, interesting and summary of how streams work, you know. They don't want to go fast, they don't want to go slow, but they want to keep on going and so forth, and how they do it. And it's mathematical that they make their bends. And the reason for that, when they make their bends, the water turns over and the cool water from the bottom comes up and that warm water goes on and on and on. And they were going to do something, and they want to pipe it or do something to. So I sent the planning and the environmentalists at the city hall a letter to this fact, and I also sent them the information about the studies that were done on streams and how they're doing it, and let them alone, let them find their meander, and they'll find the best way. Sure enough, they left it alone.
Oh.
They didn't tell me that, but I know that for the last 10 or 15 years they haven't done anything to it, and the streams are filling up and it's meandering over to another area, and they're making their own little holes and riffles, they call them, riffles, where they have to riffle and then they get oxygenated and then they get into a hole and then they do that again over and they make a bend. So it's a life in itself, you know. And if you go down to the creek and watch it for a while and go to another part and take another look at it, yeah, that's makes sense.